Okay, and welcome to another Lily of the Herbs podcast. And I'm here with Oni, my good friend from Mullum. Hey, Oni.
Hey, Lily.
And this is really spontaneous. Oni is a wonderful speaker and she has her own podcast, Pregnancy, Birth and Beyond.
Yes.
And she runs a Earth to Birth pregnancy gardening club weekly and is a craniosacral womb massage amazing practitioner and a poet and runs... Anyway... Oni is one of those people that I just really look up to, and I need her voice on here. So thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. I love chatting to my friends, and then if that conversation can ripple out to interested people, that's a fun thing to do.
Yeah, and as I got here to Oni's house, she's just like topless, if you don't mind everyone knowing that. She's like elbow deep grating beetroot for a jar club, you know. She's epic, always doing something.
I mean, you can't wear any colour shirt when you're grating beetroot, I figured. And I was like, Lily will be fine with this.
Yeah, totally fine.
Yeah.
Totally fine. And so we're also just talking about what we want to talk about. And there's a lot that I want to talk about with Oni. Mm. I think I was asking whether we were going to talk about the current times because I haven't talked about that on my podcast. And we're not going to go into specifics, but can you talk a little bit, maybe talk a little bit about your journey first.
Okay.
And how you got to today, however that takes you.
Okay, wow. Maybe you can narrow it down to something that you're specifically interested in, like...
Maybe your craniosacral...
Okay.
Yeah, abdominal work.
Yep. Okay. So in the sense of touch work, like using your hands to touch. I received craniosacral work in my early 20s, and it depends on, like, anything on the practitioner, but it was a really profound experience for me and changed my... trajectory in the sense of it helped me a lot. And then this particular practitioner, he had a recommended reading list on his website, and two of those books, The Heart of Listening 1 and The Heart of Listening 2 by Hugh Milne, I just bought because I was like, well, if they're on his list and he's done this amazing work with me, then I want to read them. And then when I was reading them, it was like something just kind of a light switched on inside of me, and something that was already innate within me just became more light was shed on whatever that quality was. Like, I remember when I was little, I would often massage everyone. Like, I'd massage my sister's friends and I'd massage my parents and, like, massage my friends. And I remember feeling like it was just a really natural thing to do. And I remember once massaging my dad's back, and he was like, you're actually really good at this, like, how did you know how to go there? And I'm like, I don't know. And yeah, I just always remember wanting to use my hands in that way. And so but some things that are true and speak loudly to you when you're young, sometimes it can get dulled out through whatever, like the searching of adolescence and just like the noise of life. So I guess in my early 20s, when I received this work and then read these books, I was just like, wow. And then Hugh Milne, the author of these books, came to Australia, to Sydney, to teach the first two levels of his training. And I somehow got into this training, even though I didn't have any prior massage experience, which was a prerequisite for the course. Like, it was just like I kind of just slid in somehow. But on this course, I was with all these really incredible practitioners. They were upskilling or broadening their scope. A lot of, like, osteopaths, chiros, physios, massage therapists, and then just, like, little me being like, I just want to do this, but, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And then throughout the course of these days, realizing that I did have a gift in the sense of deep listening with my body and specifically my hands as well, and that being validated by the teachers and the peers, like people that were way more experienced than me, just like validating that I could do this if I wanted to. And then that, you know, I guess that fire was just lit within me. And after that, I entered into a Bachelor of Midwifery, and then 1 year into that, all the seven levels of Hugh Milne's training in Tuscany were offered. He was doing that every year. And so in my, I think I took, well, in my couple of months or 3 months uni break, or I took a little bit of time off as well, I went over to Tuscany and did his full, all the seven levels of his training. He was an osteopath in his earlier life, but now he's he just has this school of craniosacral, visionary craniosacral work. So then, yeah, that was that training, and my God, that changed my life. I was like 25, and yeah, I was the only one that did all of the seven levels. So I was just this constant person in all of the courses, and wow, it was, I mean, not to sound cliche, but it really was a rite of passage. It was quite intense, but a lot of really incredible experiences, and just to be, you know, in that environment as well. I also fell in love with someone, so that was really fun, because when you're in Italy, like, yeah, it's always fun to fall in love and like wander through the olive groves in love and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, and then I...
And craniosacral, yeah, like, what is it? Like, what is... Why is it different to massage? Like, oh, where does, yeah, it come from? Like, just craniosacral.
Yeah, this is a question I answer all the time. Mm. Because all clients, when they haven't had it,
mm,
want to know, because people, like, recommend it. But then they book in and they're kind of like, so what is it? Like, mm, and, you know, I guess by virtue of the etymology of that kind of title, it's like craniosacral, it's like the I guess you're narrowing your skills and you're narrowing your skills and techniques to certain areas of the body, specifically the cranium and the sacrum. And like other parts of the body, but to be specific, yeah, the cranium and the sacrum and the cerebrospinal fluid that cushions the brain and runs between the sacrum and the cranium, and that fluid has its own tide or rhythm, and that's independent of the heartbeat and the breath, and so we actually tune into that tide, and that's just one aspect, like, 'cause, yeah, with the cranium, you're working with all the bones of the cranium, including all the facial structures, the jaw, the internal structures by association of working with the external structures, and the power of just this very slight, subtle shifts in those structures mean, well, to me, a lot of the time, mean that you can really optimize on the efficiency of neural messaging, or just like nervous system messaging or nervous system recalibration and deep nervous system release,
which is so important at the moment.
Yeah, mm, it really is. Yep. At the moment, I mean, I would always just say all the time, but yeah, at the moment, just to really keep your head above water, mm, it's important, however you can get it, whether it's craniosacral or like the work you do with Zentai or anything that reminds us that we have a body.
Mm.
Yeah, there's so much more I could say on the you know, craniosacral work. Like, it's so multi-layered, and I'm so happy if you have any more questions to answer them, but that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm.
yeah
incredible. So you were in Tuscany, you fell in love in this, and you're falling in love with craniosacral and yeah, this guy, and it was also incredible, also, yeah, like working with all these practitioners who are already working, and then you just come in and you're like, oh, I just know how to touch. I think that's amazing that you trusted and was encouraged by your father that you just had it.
Yeah,
you had that innate knowing.
Yeah and I guess I'm a bit like, no, I wouldn't say stubborn, it's the wrong word, but like,
mm,
when I get a no, it's like a fucking no. Like,
yeah,
when I get a yes, it's like a yes. And if I'm certain about something, especially if it's to do with my purpose, like my sense of purpose, it's like, it's there's no doubt involved in that. Like, sure, I have doubt with a lot of other things, but yeah, when I know I'm, you know, serving my purpose, like, I'm like, okay, I'm here, like, I better learn it all. And yeah, I guess people might have looked at me weird because I was often the youngest, but I was just like, oh, well, yeah.
Mm. So what do you think your purpose on earth is? What are you here to bring?
That's such a...
That's a massive question.
I don't know. I like to think of myself as a like a platform for expression, whether that's like interviewing in a podcast or whether that's using my body as a reference point to touch another body and then they get to express and I get to listen maybe either through my body or through my senses. So yeah, I guess to distill it, like I feel like I'm a giant ear.
Mm.
Like I do really feel like my purpose is to listen, but then also because I love a chat, love speaking, I can also be a platform for expression, whether that's someone drawing that out of someone else or articulating something or translating something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know you run embodied writing groups.
Oh, yeah.
So you have,
yeah.
That's another, like, tool, being a platform for people to express what's coming yeah. up. Mm.
Yeah, that's cool. Because it, like, I did, like, as an undergrad, I did, like, a creative writing degree in creative writing and, like, journalism. And I guess, like, I love body stuff and I've always loved pregnancy and, birth and... But then I've always loved writing and speaking. Like my mind works really fast with words and I love writing and I love poetry and I like using language. I think English is like not the best language to express, but you can work with it and like use words in creative ways, much like I don't know, other expressions like dancing or body things. But the embodied writing workshops are cool because it's merging the cerebral brain then with the more like limbic systems and the more kind of embodied systems and then figuring out what our body's saying through language, because we overuse and use language and speaking so much in this age of like technology and writing that I guess it's a good way of just accessing the body as well. It's like because we're so used to it and comfortable with it, like podcasts and talking, and we consume so many words that it's like, well, how can we use that to actually get into the body and how can we use that for the body to express itself as well? And you probably know this because you're you and you work in like similar ways in a different ways, but it's cool when you put a pen or words to like the body or and to hear those different voices and body talk.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes we're just talking from the head.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yeah. Well,
just, I feel like a lot of life, like I just spent all day on the computer and I'm feeling like, my feet there? Having to go out and lie on the grass every time I got a 5-minute break.
Oh, that's responsible.
That is very responsible. Yeah. I could have lain there for like 10 hours, But so I'm just hearing this like theme. I guess if you're listening and creating voices, it's like you've been drawn to work with bellies, like pregnant bellies and spines and sacrums, and like bring voices to people. I know you're writing groups for women. I guess like with your listening, do you feel like you're an advocate? I think you are an advocate for like women's birthrights. And
yeah,
all of these things. Why has this come to you?
I guess like regardless of gender, it just so happens that, you know, most of the grand majority of people that birth are women, and in the history of time, like it seems as if women or female bodied people have had a harder time getting their voices heard and validated. And so I guess I just find myself at a point in time where I've popped out with my purpose, and it's more like advocating for humanity.
Mm.
But because we all are birthed, or we all are born, I guess like to look at the bodies that are birthing are the easiest way to advocate for humanity. Whether like, yeah, I guess advocating for the human body and its like freedom of expression and optimal functioning and potential means looking at the origin of how we got here, which is birth, and the majority of people that are birthing are women. So it's like looking at women's bodies and how to greatly assist the ease and joy and power of that experience, which also includes greater family structures and partnerships with men and all genders. And so, yeah, that's a good question. Why? Because I think there's so much imprinting that happens at birth and pre-birth that really I just tangibly see that rippling out into people's long lives. And I am so lucky, so lucky to work with a lot of newborns and to see how craniosacral work in one instance affects their expression and their ease in just, even though they're the most like purest, newest things, like it's just, how can we set up life and families to have the best chance at living optimally? And I really do think that's through work regarding the body, whether that's like nutrition or, nutrition, naturopathy, herbalism, like, I don't know, looking at our vessel, like what, like we have to use this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So which is why Oni's on this podcast, because you're a herbalist. Like, what is that? Like, it's just, you're a medicine being in all forms. And that's what I really see, like medicine, like a medicine person being, is someone who can use their hands and what's available in nature.
Totally.
And listen. That's really what it is. It's not strung to one, segregated to one specific area. You've got to work with all of them.
Yeah, and there are people like you that are dedicating their life to herbs, or that your purpose is really directly with herbs. And like, but I really do think that we all should reclaim like our relationship with plants. And my purpose is more really just directly using my hands on bodies, but I just have great reverence to be collaborating with people like you and around people that work directly with plants. And, you know, when I, every session I do, especially if I'm working with the abdominal massage, because it's part of my training, it's like, we do thank the plants and the herbs and the environment around us. Or if I'm, you know, I'm a pretty like, not novice herbalist, I'm just not very dedicated. So like, you know, I dry my cute little flowers and like I have some herbs, but I just love how in networks or communities, like you can pay your respects to the plants and the herbs by supporting herbalists as well. Like, and so practitioners like myself using the best products that are local or from local herbalists. And I think as far as I go, I've only made like calendula infused olive oil. That's as far as I've got. I mean, it smells delicious and I love using it, but like, I actually would rather utilize like my local herbalists that are making amazing things and buy it from them than to be, doing that. You know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying, yeah. Like there's some people that you'll go to for you don't have to do it all. I totally hear that. But I'm actually like, the more work that I do, the deeper I go into my study, I'm like, actually so often we don't need strong herbs. Like the more gentle daily herbs is herbal medicine should be like a last resort, but just general day-to-day like calendula and olive oil. Aww. That's just, for me, it's just like, that's how simple it really needs to be. Like, I don't know why things got so complicated. And I get so upset when people talk about supplements to me.
Yeah.
Like, I just, because I don't understand them. It feels too complicated for me, and I don't know if our body can digest them. I really feel like digestion is something that is, the whole world is, struggling with at the moment, because it's, everything got really, really complicated.
Wow, that's,
I almost don't know how to do podcasts anymore, because I'm like, but it's so simple.
Yeah.
Just go lie outside, go jump in the ocean.
Yeah.
I don't know, like.
I like this, because I was just talking about this with a friend yesterday, and he's been spending time with this Chinese medicine practitioner who's an older man, and this particular, like, I do actually take some magnesium and zinc, and I don't often, and like it doesn't also feel like I need to all the time, but I'm kind of experimenting a little bit. But this man, which I actually intend to agree with this, said that he's like, he doesn't believe in supplements at all, because he believes that our digestive system needs to learn how to be rigorous and to be digesting and sorting through quite intense vegetation and things like that, to then actually work hard to then digest and digest bioavailable. I don't know, there's so many things, because then it's like, you look at the soil and you're like, does it have enough of this? But yeah, his argument was that when you take supplements, your whole system, including your digestive system, was like, cool, thanks. Like, didn't need to do anything. Just had this huge input of whatever, instead of like taking in a herb or a vegetable and being like, all right, what are we doing here? Let's sort this out. Like, I thought that was interesting. I don't know enough about it. I'm not a nutritionist or a naturopath. So yeah, but it's an interesting thing to look at. But when you were talking before about the simplicity, I had a memory of when you facilitated our pregnancy gardening group, and just like all these women sitting around holding herbs and connecting with them, and just like, even though only maybe one or two of them had a more depthy knowledge of herbs, it was amazing how when you invited them to look at their relationship with herbs, like how deep everyone's relationship with plants and herbs were, even with no quote unquote like knowledge. And that's what I love about what you were saying and what your work is, with the simplicity of like, yeah, herb wisdom.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I love about your craniosacral work. Like, it's incredibly complex. Like, when you look at a leaf really up close, it's like, fuck, it's a whole universe. I'm lost, you know.
Yeah.
When you touch someone's spine, you could probably be there for 10 hours.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's really subtle, like, and simple. Like, yeah. I've had a session with you and it was beautiful. It was incredible, just the sensitivity with the listening that you were doing. And it's like, again, it's like that listening.
Yeah, sometimes I do. Like, I'll have a week full of clients and I'll just reflect back at like the majority of that work is like holding people's heads, and that's so sweet. It's like such a funny thing to do for work. Like, obviously I'm skilled and like I'm not just holding a head, like I'm doing stuff and I'm like, you know, I know how to read a body and things like that. But it a lot of, yeah, things that we take for granted are pretty simple and beautiful. Yeah.
Hey, how do you, something that came up for me recently was just, and I've been thinking a lot about it, like not cleansing, but clearing after a session. Like you say, you spend a whole week holding heads. Like, what practices do you do? Do you believe that you take on things from people in those sessions?
Or yeah. And that's an evolution. Probably all practitioners may be able to relate to this, like the evolution of understanding I've just got a mind blank. Where you take on and when you give and it's like the energy body. At first I would like accidentally take things on and then on my phone. Whoopsies.
All good.
This
is an organic podcast.
I know, but like I just put on silent before, but then I forgot one of the people in there is on emergency bypass. It's not an emergency.
Okay.
I just forgot to take them off it was birth related. Anyway. At the beginning I was like, because I burp a lot, like when I meditate or after sessions, and I don't do it during sessions because generally, like, you know, it's not super nice noise, or I don't know, like it sometimes can bring people out of. So I like will breathe during sessions. Like I think the breath, like I blow out a lot, like, like, and it's just an evolution of what feels natural for my body. Sometimes I'll sneeze or like a cough will come, and it's not a contagious one, but it's just like my body doing its thing. But then afterwards, I used to be like, oh, you do your session and then you clear. And then as time's gone on, then I went through a stage of like before the session, like, you know, doing a protection thing. And then I realized that, and also I had this kind of reading with someone that was a bit like had abilities, and they're like, oh, for your energy type, none of those protection things are ever going to work. Like, you literally are so absorptive that you just, and then it was really interesting because that liberated me further. So now I'm just like so open. I don't do any, because I realized it was my mind doing all these protection rituals, and then it was almost taking me out of my body. So now I just go in so open and I'm able to be more of a vessel. I still do look after myself by grounding because I'm not super like super, super grounded all the time generally as a constitution. So like I find grounding and swimming, I swim and surf, and I find like the salt water is just the most effective. Time like lying down still in quiet, also, you know, quite in the world with people, and I don't know if you believe in extroverted or introverted, but I find myself quite extroverted. So I do have to supplement my work with like rest and just quiet and like away from anyone so that I can get back into my essence. Yeah. So then they're really not that original. Like I would say a lot of people adopt these, but the evolution of watching my attitudes towards transference is the word we're talking about, is interesting too, because what other people can say might work for them but might not be relevant for you. And you really have to find, I think, your way of preparing yourself. One thing that really works for me is like I haven't drunk alcohol for a number of years. I don't do like substances in a recreational way, like party drugs and things like that. Again, like I have nothing wrong. I have no judgment against that. But for my work, working with subtle, you know, body systems and energies, I find through experience that it creates more work for me when I have substances that might create like a stickiness for other things. And then I have to sort through that. And then I come to work and I don't know what's this or what's that. So I find that keeping myself clear by creating less work for myself in my lifestyle, like, really works for me. But it might not, so other people might not need to do that. So, yeah, I'd also have quite a good relationship with, like, I don't know, not meditation, but sometimes I just sit there and close my eyes and feel my body, and I allow my body to release things. It's kind of, yeah. It's quite general and vague, but yeah.
No, it's interesting for me because I've just been reflecting on it.
And what are you finding?
Yeah, I think sometimes I'll feel quite tired after a session, and I'm not sure if that's because I was giving more, or sometimes I'll feel really energized after a session. Just like I'll go in tired and come out just like pinging off the walls, you know, or I'll go in pinging off the walls and come out tired, you know. Like I notice very big shifts for me throughout a session, and same for my clients. But I recently had some plant medicine, which I just don't really do and wasn't really planning on doing it, and then did it. It was like a cactus thing. I just had a little bit, and I immediately, within putting it in my mouth, was like burping and vomiting. Wow. I hadn't eaten that day. I'd just eaten some flowers. So I was just like burping and spitting up flowers.
Whoa.
For like 3 to 4 hours, like just continue. And then in the end, I had some friends who were with me, and I was out in the fields, and they were like, what do you want? Like, what's going on? Do you feel like, and that my friend, she was in the experience as well, and she was like, I really feel that you're cleansing other people's things from your womb, actually.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I need a yoni steam. So I just sat out in the field and did a yoni steam.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because you can collect it in your tissues. Like you can, depending on your, I don't know, who you are, like especially intense other people's traumas, like if you are practicing, you can collect things in your tissues. So I think clearing is, I'm not saying it's not important, but like everyone does it differently, and sometimes you accidentally do accumulate stuff and you don't even know, like, and that happens with me. I'll just get like a doozy of a migraine and I'm like, oh, didn't even know, but it's my body having that, like you did with the burping and the like vomiting, and it's like your body will tell you when it's like reached its threshold, I reckon. Like even if you're not doing your clearing properly or enough, I reckon your body does it for you at some point, which is not always fun, but
yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And also believe like the menstrual cycle, in a way, like the whole month can have, you can just release so much.
We're so lucky, aren't we?
Yeah,
bloody hell.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, oh, I just feel like I'm bleeding for everyone. No,
totally.
Why is it so heavy? It has felt heavy recently, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of collective. But we weren't going to go deep into that. We're going to steer clear.
Oh, well, we can talk about, like we were saying before, I don't know, sometimes the nitty gritty of all the polarities are a bit, it's just like I feel like they're polluting so many of my relationships and conversations that, like, I'm like, oh, but at the same time, like, us talking about the nervous system and touch and, like, that we've both been busy as practitioners during this time is cool. Oh, to talk about that, like, how we can collectively regulate. And, you know, it's great people looking after themselves, but it's also not great that people are desperate to be, like, seeking help to regulate themselves. So, yeah, it is interesting being a practitioner at the moment. Yeah,
regulating. Well, it's like, well, how do you regulate yourself? And I think it is being really, actually talking about clearing, but also, like, being really mindful before entering into conversations
and that's
substances
true.
As well. I think just, like, not taking on extra stuff that you have to process.
Yes.
But choosing, like you say, you just choose to go out and surf and
be
in the sun. And I really feel that.
And that's a lucky choice to have, I guess. Like, I always look way too tanned for whatever season it is. But, like, sometimes these things can really save you. Like the elements.
Yeah, I think
what you were saying. Yeah.
Bare feet on the earth, actually. Like, actually just putting your feet on the ground, like, that's so many studies out there around how that balances our nervous system 100%, and, like, levels of inflammation just go down within 5 minutes of having bare contact on the earth.
Wow.
And who invented shoes?
I know.
It's like, if you live in a second story building and then it's cold outside and you go outside with shoes on and then you come home and you go to bed, you have, like, had zero earth time. And we can spend maybe 3 days without touching the earth. It's so wild.
Isn't it?
Mm.
Just wherever you live, doesn't matter if you live in the Northern Rivers like us or in a city, like, you literally do have to make a concerted effort to get your feet on the ground.
Yeah, you really do. Like, it's like you think about sun, you're like, oh, have I had any? Well, I think about sun. I'm like, have I had any sun today? Sometimes I have to make an effort if I'm in uni.
Yes.
But, like, yeah, making time for sun, making time for feet on the earth, making time, if you can, get to, like, a body of water to immerse yourself. And then, yeah, I guess touch.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just touch people more, which is so politically incorrect at the moment.
Well, like, obviously we know that there's ways to do that in a healthy way. But I think touch is the most underutilized and, I guess, under represented. I don't know how to explain that. But, like, people are so undernourished with touch. I think that's just a general knowledge thing now, like, with levels of loneliness on the planet, and that people are paying, like, professional cuddlers and things like that, which I think is awesome in itself. But, like, how can we recreate our relationships and communities to include more touch? Because touch regulates nervous systems, and there's ways to implement that within your environment, with being, like, in a respectful way and healthy ways. And touch is, like, how we learn as babies, like, facial expressions and touch, like, grow our brains and grow our relational capacities. And I think that we forget that when we get older and all stiff, and what you were saying, like, never touch the ground with our feet, like, you forget this is literally brain food.
And then, like, do all of that and then maybe have some herbs.
Yeah. Always have some herbs.
Yeah, like, working with them.
Yeah.
Maybe meeting the plant and having a relationship with it as well, I think.
Yeah, and that, like, it's not mutually exclusive, like, the power of touch and then the power of herbs or flowers or plants, like, and touching our food before we eat it. Like, it's like, we are mammals and we are sensorial beings, and, like, yeah, to use these hands that we have either to touch or to pick stuff and to eat stuff, and, like, we are animals. Like, I think that's another thing we forget, like, all mammals use touch or to communicate or to, like, squeeze, or, you know, like, as humans, our heads are squeezed out of our mother's vaginas, and we help that happen, and we move our bodies to squirm out, and, like, we use our bodies from the very beginning. And it's like, I don't know, I just think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think we're evolving really quickly, or the our expectations of fitting into society today is that we will be like these tech wizards as well. Like, just like onto it. It's just, there's, feels like it's, you've got to be onto it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, but also that needs to be balanced.
Yeah.
It needs to be equal parts on the scale of to survive.
Totally. And like to incorporate spontaneity, embodied spontaneity. Like, I think you can get labeled anti-tech or so easily just by advocating for more embodied ways of being, but it's not about that. Like, I feel like with the advancement of technology, not only do we become more disassociated from our bodies and our senses, but we also sometimes, I think, infiltrate shame or disgust with like spontaneous body movement. Mm. And I think spontaneous body movement is like part of unwinding a nervous system too. Like, you see babies and they just do the weirdest spontaneous body movement. And we get so ordered into ways of being, but also into ways of moving, that like, it's a cool thing about the craniosacral unwinding that happens in a session, is that sometimes there'll be like an involuntary unwinding or movement of the body. And it's almost like, the body is like literally unwinding from how rigid we are generally.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that technology is to blame for that, but I think technology really is glorified. And then the more, I guess, the more embodied, spontaneous movement gets a little bit neglected, or even, discarded, like it's not useful somehow. Whereas dance has been a part of every culture, and shaking has been a part of many ways of releasing for animals, and
you're getting me really excited for my contact improv class tonight. I'm like, I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna go and move. But yeah, so I feel good. Like anyone listening right now should just start wriggling and twisting and stretching, feeling. It's like I also had a teacher last year, and she was like, especially for women's pelvises, sitting down all the time. They're not meant to be sitting down all the time. It's like a rocking motion, you know, like having rocking the pelvis is like incredibly important for like flow of the menstrual fluids and everything. Like,
so true.
And the work that both of us do, like womb work, we just see so much stagnation.
Yes, totally. And also, I just love that, you know, you've had a day on the computer, but you're kind of balancing that out by going to a dance class. Like, there's ways of doing this type of humanity. Like, you know, if you do have to be online all day, like, you just have to allow your body to be a body later on. And or lie on the floor and like roll around like a baby. Sometimes it is more of a class thing, but we have the capacity. Like, I love that you just said about rocking the pelvis, because it reminds us what shape of pelvis is. Like, I feel like some people can intellectualize the body so much as well. Well, I think the age of wellness can intellectualize bodies so much that we forget actually the three-dimensional structures we're in. Like, when I ask my clients like about their organs, and do any organs really speak to you, or do any organs draw your attention, and then really honing in on their organs, and, you know, I'm massaging stomachs and talking about organs and where they are. And it's like, I think this happened for me personally, so I can see it happening for other people as well. And they confirm that it's like, fuck, I forgot my organs. I mean, like, I know they exist, but I kind of forgot about them, and they're just there in my stomach. And like, that's, whoa. Oh yeah. My liver's just here. Like, it's fucking huge. Like, it's working all day. We can touch that.
Yes.
And we can be like, hey, liver, like, how are you going? And the more we give attention to our bodies and our organs and our systems, whether that's like your veins, or they literally light up and start speaking back. It's like the plants. Yes. Like, the plants do that.
Yes.
And I just think that's so funny. We forget our pelvis is a bowl. And it's like this full bowl, like talking to each other. It's not just like, the womb and the ovaries. It's like all of those ligaments and muscles that hold that into place then refer back into your sacrum, and then the sacrum refers down into your legs and also up your back, and then through your abdominal structures, and the fascia is a network that holds all your organs together that then goes up to your shoulders. And anyway, like, you know, you get my point, because you know bodies as well. But it's like you can actually get stuck into anatomy book mind.
Rather than like, I can feel this vibrating, alive, moving thing within me.
Yeah, like
entity.
Or lying down and just holding your, where your kidneys are and being like, my kidneys are there.
They have a personality.
Yeah.
Like, kidneys are just like, yeah, they all do. They all have like a different thing to say. Yeah, where are your kidneys? Yeah.
Totally. And like, wouldn't it be great? Like, I know women that are so smart, and they get to like maybe baby making journey, or maybe it's menstrual difficulties, or, and only then do they learn really about how their bodies function. And these are like brilliant people, but they, I think, sometimes feel betrayed of like, this is my body and I'm whatever, like, you know, in my late 20s or early 30s, and I'm just learning that this affects this, affects this, affects this. It's like, wouldn't it be awesome if you could ask an 8-year-old, maybe not an 8-year-old, like a 12-year-old, where their spleen is.
Yeah.
And then I know we do biology and all this stuff, but still it's intellectualized. But like, I taught my, like, it was a kind of casual lockdown homeschool lesson for my niece and nephew, and they're 6 and 8. And we just did a really, really basic like embryology and birth class. But my nephew's 6, like I just did really basic stuff. But we're talking about the placenta and how it develops, and then that cord goes into your belly button, and when you come out, like, you know, and that's with you the whole birth. And then I got them to find their belly buttons, and his little face, when, because he was watching like the drawing of the animation of the embryo and, you know, how birth happens. But then his big body is like 6. He found his belly button, and then he looked up at the screen, you know, unfortunately, but looked up at the screen and was like, it, like the light went on of like orientating himself as a human. I mean, through birth, but you can do this in many ways. Like, and he was kind of like, oh, whoa, like I came from that. Like I had a placenta, like that's what this thing is, this belly button. It's not just a hole in my stomach. Like there's this whole story. And like, wouldn't it be so nice if we all had that more like, I don't know, 3D relationship with our bodies growing up.
Yeah. I think, yeah, 100%. I think we're talking about just like keeping it simple and keeping it real and coming inhabiting and not dissociating.
Yeah.
Inhabiting and being here.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, I really feel that. It's just so simple. I'm almost like, I kind of just want to throw away everything that's to do with the mind for a whole week.
We're mammals. I think we're mammals.
Yeah, just follow the body. Imagine just one day just following the body.
Oh my God, I'm going to do it. I'll probably sleep all day.
I know. Well, we've been having a great chat. Is there any other things that we can... Yeah, it's still recording. we're like mammals. We're looking
at this phone.
Technology, is it working? What else? Like, what's this last? Just like something that just comes from your body.
Okay.
To speak.
Okay. As like a tying, like a concluding thing,
and allow it to just arise from the body.
I don't know. I've just been thinking a lot about like how tender we all are. And I think that quality of tenderness, whether it's like in a flower or in a, like, babies are allowed to be tender, but then it's like that permission to be gentle and tender seems to either be taken away from us by certain social structures, or we take it away from ourselves, like, I don't know why. And I just feel like these times have shown how resilient we are potentially, but also how fragile we are as a species, and not just in the body but also in the mind. And I have a lot of compassion for that. Like, I've just been feeling a lot of compassion for that tenderness within myself and also within others. And I feel like that's such a uniting point to like look at how like we are beings of the heart, and like the heart is so tender. And yeah, I don't know, that's it's like not advice or anything, but it's just something I've been noticing. And yeah, don't get me wrong, like I get really impatient and I can be a bit of a hard ass sometimes. But yeah, I like that quality of tenderness at the moment.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. It's so nice to talk to you and just understand you a bit more as well. So thanks.
It's nice to talk to you too. Yeah, I love this. Can't wait to hear more.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, thanks everybody. And I'll post about Oni on the little blurb, and I'll say how we can contact Oni. I know you have do you like people to find you on social media?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it is. I'll just check. I think it's Oni underscore keeper of the hearth, which is like H-E-A-R-T-H, like a fire. It's the meaning of my full name, Henriette, which is, yeah, so yeah.
Beautiful. And I'll put like your website on there as well. Oh, and your podcast, because other people should also listen to your podcast.
Pregnancy, birth and beyond, it's all that kind of stuff related. So if you're into that kind of stuff. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Have fun at dance.
Thank you.
That was so fun.